From Nordic Institute and the Sault Ste. Marie Innovation Center's Rural Agri-Innovation Network, we are committed to promoting resilient Northern Ontario communities. Over the years, we have built local economies, attracted young people to education and employment opportunities, and bridged the gaps between communities, funders, and leaders. Now we are partnering to bring you a brand new podcast series, The PACSEC Project.
Welcome to part two of our ongoing look at the impact of sandhill cranes on the North's agricultural sector. If you missed part one, I would encourage you to go back and listen to fully understand the strategies we will discuss today. In that episode, we heard from a few guests about the impact of the sandhill crane, not just on farms, but also their impact to Indigenous communities in the North. What struck me was how highly intelligent these birds are in their interactions with farmers. We continue our discussion with Chief Dean Sayers with Batchewana First Nation, Chris Sharp, a biologist with Environment and Climate Change Canada, and Justin Godet, owner of Valley Growers, a potato farm in Sudbury. In this segment, we discuss how farms are adapting to the damage that is being caused by sandhill cranes and what they are learning through that process. Here's Justin Godet again from Valley Growers. We start off speaking with Justin about a product called Avipel, a seed treatment for corn that repels birds like sandhill cranes. While this product isn't available in Canada, producers in the US have been using it effectively as a non-lethal alternative to mitigate damage from sandhill cranes. Here's Justin.
I've heard of a crop solution called Avipel, which deters sandhill cranes in a non-lethal way. Does that technology work with potatoes?
So we are doing a trial with Avipel this year just to see if it's going to work to push them away. The problem with Avipel right now is it's not registered to be used on potatoes. So the trial section that we're going to try it on, the potatoes will have to be discarded. So we're just throwing them away. So we're doing a very small scale trial to see if it works or not. But chemicals may not be the solution either, but if it does work, it might have to be a solution that we look into for sure.
Do you have any other hopes for other methods to limit the impact of something that could really do it?
I have noticed that if I plant oats or other grains close to the potatoes, that'll keep them busy for a little bit. So lure crops seem to help them keep them out of the potatoes for a small period of time. We've been working with a few other people, and I think we're going to start another trial with a lure crop, and I think we're going to go with barley. But what they've been noticing is that the cranes may be eating the potatoes just to get the water out of them and not so much for the food. So they're thinking if we can plant a good grain crop such as barley and provide them with water, that they may not have to go into the potato fields, and we might be able to keep them in those spots. If we can plant those lure crops in the same spots every year and get them attracted to that spot, then maybe we can keep them in those areas and not in our potato fields. The other way we've tried as well is helium-filled balloons as like a scarecrow. That works, but the helium only lasts about 2 days. And you have to go put them in the middle of the field. So you have to walk out there with a balloon every 2 days and refill it with helium. And the other thing we've tried was scarecrows. So that last year I tried that, and I put the identical scarecrows in all the fields to try to show them that if they were scared of the one scarecrow, that they wouldn't know which fields like an actual human was in, kind of thing, right? So that would work for a little bit, but then they'd build the confidence up, and then they'd be right beside them. So it didn't work too well.
I did read a resolution that you did to your local Soil and Crop Improvement Association to seek a hunting season of sandhill cranes. Has anything come of that request for you and the association?
I haven't heard anything if the hunt is going to be put into place. I know it's one of the solutions that they were thinking about, but I haven't heard back yet if it's going to go through or not. I think it did get declined at one point, but I think they're still trying to push forward with that.
Are you still of the opinion that a hunt would be maybe one of the top methods to control the impacts of the sandhill crane, or has your mind kind of shifted in that?
To be honest with you, like, just killing the sandhill cranes or like a hunt, it may not be the right solution, but it may work. I know they use hunting in a lot of different species to control the animal population. So it'd be up to those professionals for sure to be able to say, yep, like the population of sandhill cranes in Sudbury is way too large and it needs to be controlled by a hunt. As a farmer, we can apply for like a kill permit for the birds. And it's not a way that I like to go about it. The hunt may be a good solution to control the population of the birds. And if the MNR sees that, yep, you know, the sandhill crane population in Sudbury is way too large and it needs to be controlled by a hunt, then it would be probably a solution that would work, in my opinion, for sure. And even if they were only allowed to hunt specific fields, let's say, at least it would keep them out of those fields and into like a less costly crop. But potatoes is a very costly crop to have damage in.
Now, you have a license to, I guess, kill a certain number of cranes. Do other growers in the Sudbury region have do something similar, or maybe they're not at this type of scale of growing that you are?
No, I think the other growers in Sudbury also have the same permit. I think they may even practice it a bit more than I do, but it really comes down to time, and especially like the major damage occurs in September. And in September, as a farmer, you have way better things to be doing than trying to be chasing cranes around fields. So the timing isn't right. So, but I definitely think that other farmers are practicing it as well, and they're using that as a scare tactic too.
Okay, so we'll be interested to hear, I guess, after September, of how some of the tactics you used worked out for you. It'd be interesting to see if ApiPel applied to a lure crop could have an impact as well to deter the cranes from returning to that field.
Yeah, for sure. I think they have been using it on corn. They've been treating corn seed with it because the cranes will target the corn as they get planted. But it doesn't affect whether you can harvest the corn or not. But that was another solution that we thought of, was to spread out treated corn with ApiPel around the borders of the field. And then maybe the cranes would come in, eat that corn, and then realize, okay, no, this field's bad, and not go in it, right? Yeah, there's been lots of ideas tossed around, and we're really trying to figure out a solution, because it seems to be that it's mostly just our region that's impacted with these sandhill cranes and not across Ontario. So when you have such a small percentage of farmers that are dealing with an issue, it doesn't get pushed as much as if there was a lot more of us, right? So,
yeah, farmers in Algoma here have been dealing with this issue for quite a number of years, particularly barley and oats and now corn, as more growers are getting into that. So yeah, we haven't outsmarted them yet. Has there been much movement of any kind of damage compensation type of program for wildlife like sandhill cranes?
Not a lot. We did speak with a few people from AgriCorp and trying to figure out different ways, because I think there are spot loss programs and stuff like that. But what they were explaining it to me, it's kind of like the whole program would have to switch from the normal crop insurance to a spot loss program. And the normal crop insurance would never cover anything for the crop, because the damage is so directed into specific fields. And it would never impact your crop enough to trigger a crop insurance claim. So in terms of the compensation, I haven't seen too much progress into a good solution on how we can compensate for the damages. But I think, in my opinion, the only proper way would be a spot loss program on specific fields and specific areas in that field.
I don't know if there's a silver bullet to this. Yeah.
Yeah, we're still looking for that, so.
With Chris, we're going to be talking just about the impacts of cranes that he's observing through a project called the Sandhill Crane Movements and Agricultural Conflicts Project. We had the opportunity to talk to Justin Godet from Valley Growers, and he spoke to some of the different methods that they're using on their farm just to test what they could do to help deter the impacts using lure crops and using other kinds of ways to scare off the cranes. Could you speak to some of the farmer involvement in the research and what potentially that could have an impact in helping to learn more?
Yeah, so Justin's actually one of the farms that we trap cranes on his farm, and we've been working pretty closely with a couple potato growers in the Azilda area because of the financial implications for crane damage there. So one important tool that CWS and Environment and Climate Change Canada can provide to producers is a damage or danger permit that allows for the killing of a small number of cranes in fields experiencing damage just in order to support other scaring activities. So that is one important tool. But what Justin and others have been doing, that they recognize that that's just a small piece of the puzzle. And they've been applying different strategies that are well suited to their farms and been pretty innovative about it. So some of the potato producers in Azilda have been using scarecrows, and Justin in particular is dressing these scarecrows in blaze orange. So very, very noticeable. And the reason they're doing that is because once the birds become conditioned to the scarecrows, which is going to happen, at first the cranes are quite scared of the scarecrows, and then they land and then they get close and they realize, oh, this isn't a big deal. But once the birds become conditioned, Justin and other people listed on the permit, they're able to go in there and just stay with a shotgun under the authority of their damage or danger permit and hide in plain sight wearing blaze orange. So when a couple cranes come close, they're able to shoot at the cranes or even kill a few individuals. And that reaffirms the effectiveness of the scarecrow, because now the birds realize, holy geez, these things are something we need to be concerned about. Other farms, other producers that we've spoken to have modified the crops they grow to feed their livestock in response to the damage. So we're working over the next couple of years with Justin and others to explore the use of lure crops and refuge areas as a means to help mitigate their losses. Lure crops and refuge areas away from the potatoes might help give the cranes a safe place to go where they're not being disturbed, and thereby reduce and help mitigate the conflict that we're seeing in the potato fields.
Yeah, it does seem there's no silver bullet to this, and it's amazing to see the unique strategies that are being employed. But one particular product's use for sandhill cranes is the product called Avipel. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that product and maybe what future it holds for Canada.
So Avipel is the product name for a chemical known as 9,10-anthraquinone. This chemical has been used internationally as a bird deterrent for crops as well as turf grass. The product comes in a powdered form and a liquid spray, and it's shown some promise to deal with some of the damage caused by sandhill cranes. So it's been effective as a seed treatment primarily for protecting corn seed from sandhill cranes in the United States. So in Michigan and Wisconsin, it's fairly widely used. When the crane feeds on seed treated with AviPel, the bird develops an aversion to the seed and learns to avoid it. The nice thing is that the bird will continue to feed in the same fields, but seems to leave the seed alone, so thereby eliminating the damage. While anthraquinone has shown promise in the U.S. for farmers with crane issues, and it's even been endorsed by the International Crane Foundation as a non-lethal mitigation tool, it's currently not available in Canada. I know a number of producers are anxious to get their hands on it. It's just at this point, it's a regulatory process for the chemical to be approved.
We talked to Justin too about a resolution he put forth through Soil and Crop, which was to consider a hunt for sandhill cranes in Ontario. Do you feel that a sandhill crane hunt would be an effective deterrent? And would the population be at risk somehow if a hunt was introduced?
I think that if a sandhill crane hunt were introduced in Ontario, there'd be little mitigating effect on the damage experienced by producers for a couple reasons. First off, the objective of any potential hunt would not be to decrease the population in any large way. The sandhill crane population in the province is much smaller than many other migratory bird species that are currently hunted. And due to their life history, cranes can be very susceptible to overharvest. They're very late to mature, often not maturing till they're between 5 and 8 years of age. And then they only ever produce a maximum of 2 young a year. So they're not as good at replacing themselves as, say, a species like a Canada goose, which breeds for the first time at kind of 2 or 3 years of age, producing 6 eggs a year every year. So they're a little more susceptible to overharvest. Therefore, we'd have to monitor and regulate any hunting season to ensure that the harvest is sustainable. That said, a hunting season would not significantly decrease the number of cranes on the landscape. Second, the migratory bird hunting seasons in Ontario can only occur between September 1st and March 20th due to the international agreement between Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. So with the exception of potatoes, so in Justin's case, the bulk of the damage associated with sandhill cranes occurs outside of the period in which hunting is possible. So there would be little opportunity for hunters to help deter cranes from fields where they are causing damage. There's also some concern that because producers wouldn't necessarily want hunters in the standing crop where damage could occur, that hunting that occurred in harvested fields might push cranes into fields where there is unharvested crop and therefore potentially make the damage even worse. So it is a tricky thing. Without a doubt, even if there was a hunting season, there would still be the need for on-farm mitigation. So as you mentioned, there's no one silver bullet. With all wildlife conflicts, you have to really take a comprehensive approach to the problem, figure out why the animals or the birds are using an area, and try to address that.
Yeah, just the sense that we got from Justin, a comprehensive approach would make a lot of sense in that, because a lot of the activities that he was doing to deter cranes, he was saying, has had an impact on the cranes to move into other farmers' fields around him. And so almost like a damage compensation program for certain crops might make some sense for around certain crops. And like you said, you're kind of learning the different impacts that it's having. So a study like this would certainly be a benefit for regulators that are considering damage compensation.
Yes, it would. And Justin's point about moving the birds around, that is one of the attractive pieces of this lure crop and this refuge idea, is that you would give the birds a place that they wanted to be where no damage could occur. So it gives them an option. Instead of pushing them just out of your field into the neighbor's field, which is less than ideal, they have a spot where they can go where they're going to stay out of trouble.
In this episode, we're looking at impacts of cranes on agriculture in our region. And hunting, trapping, sugar making, planting crops was always part of indigenous ways in culture within this area. So thank you, Chief Sayers, for taking the time out of what would be a busy schedule to speak with me today.
Miigwech. Thank you, David. No problem at all. I'm looking forward to being able to share some of the insights that I may be able to provide based on my experiences, where I'm from, and who I am.
From your perspective, what has been the history of agriculture in the area? And how's the participation in it been shaped, maybe by the outside interest, missionaries, or those controlling interests in mining and forestry? What does that look like?
There was a routine. There was synchronicity with creation, with what was going on in the environment. Everything had its time and everything had its place with how we lived. And we had it down to a science. When we go and pick medicine or pick food, we always maintain and think about not overpicking and make sure that we don't over harvest in everything that we do. And when something else is ready, we leave and we move to the next thing. We don't keep going till it's all gone. And there was a place for cranes in there. There was never a depletion. Everything was balanced.
And has there been any examples in your community of agriculture that may have promise for the future? How do you see it developing in the community?
Oh yeah, we're really resilient, and we adapt and we change and we evolve. The elders talk about potatoes, and potatoes will grow here. So you see a lot of indigenous people grow potatoes. Corn was something else that was really prominently grown here. But there's also wild foods that grow that don't need much prompting. It just happens naturally. And people know around here where to go get leeks or where to go get other foods and medicines. Like even myself, I go picking things. But we also have to remember those original expectations on how we would look after all of creation at the same time and not eradicate or eliminate a species out of our short-sightedness.
I guess in closing, in this short time that I've learned about crane leadership and figures in the past, have been struck by their determination to defend the rights of indigenous people. And they made a lot of noise. Has that been your driving force as well? And is that something that you're trying to get across to the next generation of leaders as well?
There are innate cultural attributes that members of the Crane clan have. And sometimes they're just going to present themselves. And you also find that in families, Crane clan families that may not even know their Crane clan will end up developing and producing a lot of leadership in the community. Because not everybody really has a good understanding of the clan system, but elders can look at a person and watch them for a while, and they can say, you're Bear clan or you're Crane clan, because of their attributes, what they do for a living, how they treat people around them. So there's still people that have those gifts. The Crane clan is going to continue to fulfill their original instructions, their responsibilities, and I can see us going back to capturing the essence of that traditional governance system. It may not look exactly like it did a couple hundred years ago, but the world will be better for it because of our ability to be who we were intended to be.
We've heard about the resilience of farmers in the ways they are trialing different approaches to mitigate the damage that's being caused. We tend to think that innovation can only come from the outside, but Justin's example of the scarecrow with the high-vis orange vest turned out to be an effective mix of old and new to solve a problem. We really appreciate the perspectives and time each of our guests took, and would love to hear what you think about the Sandhill Crane impacts. We're on Facebook and Instagram at the PACSAC Project, and you can also find us on Twitter at the PACSAC Pod. If you're not on social media, you can email us at the PACSAC Project at gmail.com. To find more episodes, head to nordicinstitute.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google Podcasts. Your participation and support means a lot to us, so thank you for following us online. Thank you to FedNor, Nordic Institute, Algoma University, and the Sault Ste. Marie Innovation Center for making this podcast possible and allowing us to share stories of resilience in northern communities.